CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, little Machine Gun Kelly. That's right. CliffCentral.com. Very, very happy Wednesday morning to you. I hope it's going. Oh, I almost played that again. Hope it's going very well today. I hope your day's off to an awesome start. That's called Bloody Valentine, but it's almost December, so you've got to get your shit together for December. Have you got plans for December? Have you made any plans? I've decided I'm not going anywhere, as I said, and I'm going to stick to it. I'm actually looking forward to spending December just chilling, not having to spend a huge amount of money. I don't think I necessarily need to be at the beach, or I need to be in the mountains, or I need to be anywhere else. So I'm just going to take it easy. But I know what's going to happen. I'm going to see other people's pictures, and I'm going to get real FOMO. I'm going to go, oh, damn, I need the sea. So I'm, you know what? Maybe in January something will happen. We'll see.
Yeah, it's always the case, though.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
FOMO's real. It's a real big.
FOMO's going to get you.
FOMO's a big deal. It's
and it's created by Mark Zuckerberg,
right?
And Jack Dorsey,
exactly.
Headline sponsors of FOMO.
Yeah, that was awesome. Anyway, if you didn't watch that yesterday, that was quite a big story. The U.S. Senate really handing Zuckerberg and Dorsey their asses, and Jack Dorsey looks terrible. He's got this long beard like Rasputin, and he looks like a homeless person. And this is one of the richest people in the world. Such an embarrassment.
Yeah, I just want to.
No, he's living his best life.
Oh, please.
Apparently, he like meditates and like he's really spiritual now and fasting, etc.
You can meditate with a trimmed beard.
I don't think people like that. I don't think people like that are sincere. I really don't.
So, yesterday, while you were watching that, I was watching this whole SABC thing play out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm conflicted with how I should feel.
Yeah.
Or even how I feel right now. I don't know whether you've seen the video of Criselda Lewis, who's an SABC news anchor.
Yeah.
Who was speaking out in the middle of the newsroom on behalf of many of her colleagues as retrenchment letters were handed out again. So the SABC was going to cut off a lot of people. And she had this, it was emotive speech, but there's a part of me that thinks it's a little too late now. You know, she says to the two members of management who are standing before her, things like, don't let the system use you. Don't let corruption win. You know we can do better here. And we are the newsroom
Is she hoping for a political career after the SABC fires her one day?
Well, I just think she was hoping for retrenchments not to be handed out. And it seems that it has actually worked, because the latest statement that came from the SABC is the fact that now they have halted their retrenchment process.
You know, so, obviously, listen, my sympathies go out to anyone who's losing their job because the economy is contracting, and because there just aren't enough things that people can do for money in South Africa. That's unfortunately the way it is. And we do not have enough money in the system. So this is going to happen. And I don't want to sound cavalier about that, because it's a major problem. But obviously, Criselda's never run a business, because she doesn't seem to understand that businesses are not there to give people jobs. A business is there to make a product or to deliver a service. And once you have too many people in the business, and not enough demand for the product or the service, you have to lay people off. Otherwise, the whole business collapses and then everyone loses their jobs. She is not the kind of person you should be asking for advice from when it comes to hiring and firing people. And she should not be in charge of policies around how a business runs. She's worked in a newsroom and in entertainment her whole life. And I say that as someone who's worked in news and entertainment my whole life. But I've also started running a business in the last 7 years, and the two are very different things. So I'm sorry, Criselda, I am sympathetic, but you should not be changing the way that an old dinosaur shit show like the SABC. I'm terribly sorry, but that's just not, it's not something you can save. That place is a disaster. Mm. Listen to this. Here's the clip. This is I'm going to give credit. This is off Yusuf Abramji's Twitter feed.
You know none of the names of these people who work here. We grew up with these people here. Sisters, no. No. Yeah. When you came here, this is not what we expected from you. No. We have great admiration for you in the journalism industry in this country. Don't let these people do this to you. The Jimmy Matthews of this world came, revered journalists in this country. Circumstances. Where are those people today? Where are those people today? We can't sleep. It's headed towards Christmas.
We can't breathe.
Portia, Jesus. Who the newsroom cannot survive without. That is what Lester.
I've got bad news for her. Like, the whole country can survive without the SABC newsroom.
Is that not true?
I mean, can we do without the SABC news? Those who agree, put your hands up. There's plenty of other places you can get your news these days. Thank you.
Depends if so the shot takes on over Netflix.
Oh, right. She mentions things like, you know, right in the middle of lockdown, they were sent out to hospitals and some of them even got the virus for the name of the job.
No way.
And this is how they essentially repaid.
Where? Listen, where? I'm sorry. I wish I could find a deeper well of I feel bad for people losing their jobs. That is absolutely true. But I do not feel especially sorry for SABC journalists who have been retrenched. Sorry.
Yeah, this retrenchment comes as the SABC reported yesterday that they have a net loss mm-hmm. of 511 million rand.
Right, because they've got that newsroom full of people going, we can't breathe, because they obviously can't do their journalism jobs either.
The TV license revenue dropped by 18%.
Right.
So,
I wish I could be more sympathetic than I am. All I can say is, sorry, guys, if you've lost your jobs. That is happening to people in all industries. It's not just an SABC thing. But the SABC in particular has been run extremely badly. And that is not the fault of the people who work there. I used to work there. It's the fault of the people who've managed the place into the ground. But nobody owes you a living and nobody owes you a job. And just because you've been ensconced, as Criselda said, in the newsroom for however many years, and they've known each other for many years, that's, I'm afraid, completely inconsequential. Your feelings are not important in this respect. They're running a business, and that business has been run into the ground. It doesn't have a hope in hell of surviving. You've got to move on.
Do you know, like, it's so true when you say, like, no one owes you a job. Like, that's so true about life. People walk outside their house and they think people owe them things and life owes them things. But the truth is life doesn't owe you anything. And when push comes to shove, you can actually do a lot for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been like taking note of like YouTubers lately. They, these guys that literally will like turn on their webcam. So when we were hearing about the retrenchments and the journalists, I'm like thinking like, cool, if you're really as good as you think you are, that you shouldn't be retrenched, why don't you start a YouTube channel and start reporting to
Absolutely.
An audience, and then you'll get paid for that.
Absolutely. We know this for a fact. We interviewed a guy just the other day on my TV show called Yusuf Omar, who used to be at ENCA. He's now working for Snapchat. And he's doing international stories, like really big stories. And he's one of these citizen journalists. I think he's earning way more money than he did when he was a news person here in South Africa. If you're really good at this stuff, people will find money for you. But you can't expect some big corporation that is living off the public payroll, that's essentially being supplemented in its income by the taxpayer. I mean, we've bailed out the SABC, what is it, 5 or 6 times already? There's no reason that we should be paying for these guys in the newsroom. I'm sorry. Most of us aren't even using your services. Most of us aren't watching the news on SABC because we don't believe it. We don't trust it.
I feel like the reason why people don't go out and, like, let's say a journalist doesn't go out and do their own thing is because they're too scared of growing an audience. No one wants to start out with like three people and not keep going until you have like 100 people. Everyone wants to start out a big name. And the truth is, you need to start out a janitor in life. I mean, on your show, I started cleaning dishes and worked my way up. You need to start at the bottom.
I remember you doing that. That's hugely to your credit. You know, the funny thing is, when I look back on, like, let's talk about you for a second, because you're on the show this morning. When you started off, you were like in the production room. Aria brought you in, and I didn't even know who you were for the first 2 weeks. And then I looked around, and suddenly you were emptying rubbish bins and doing the dishes. And I was like, who the hell's this guy? And who are we paying for him? And then eventually I was like, well, he's got some chutzpah, you know, he's doing work. He's making himself useful. That wasn't glamorous work. You didn't enjoy it. You weren't going, oh, yes, I'm so excited to wash the dishes.
No, because my policy on life is pay now, play later. You need to be persistent and get through what you think you need to do to get to where you want to be. And that's something that, like, people aren't prepared to do. Like, anyone can go out there and start, like, a podcast, but no one wants an audience of four. Truth is, you need to grow an audience. You need to be persistent at what you're doing. And, like, for instance, let me break it down even more granular over here. Do you remember a couple of years ago when I booked Nasty C to be on your show?
Yeah.
And Nasty rapper, C had one song. He was a nobody.
Yeah, he was.
He was the easiest guy to book ever. And we had him on the show. He was a nobody. I was like, this dude's song is epic. He's going to be a somebody. Like, 2 years after your show did he start, like, really blowing up. Mm-hmm. He was persistent. He kept producing. And
you know what's
that's
funny?
What people need to do.
You know what's funny is they actually asked me, his manager this year, asked me to be on a video that they're doing, which I think is being shown in America, on the rise of his career and how he came in.
Oh,
and precisely what you're talking about. Like, he was a nobody and nobody knew who he was. And it was the first place that he got heard. And look at him now. He's flying, and I'm so happy for him. But the guy worked. He put in a lot of work behind the scenes. Now, I'm not saying that these SABC anchors don't work hard. I'm sure they do, and I'm sure there are extremely talented and very, very capable people in that newsroom. In fact, I can say that categorically, because I know that there are hardworking, brilliant people at the SABC, but they're in the minority. And unfortunately, the people who are mismanaging the place and who don't know what they're doing are the people who are in charge. So it's an ugly situation. What can I tell you? But the key here, the solution, is not to keep everybody employed and run the place even more into the ground. The key is to find a way of keeping it going, which sometimes means retrenching people. I wish that we could go and retrench the entire board, the board might actually be trying to get things right now, which is why they suggested these retrenchments. But all of those people who are politically connected, who are somewhere in the top echelons, those people need to be fired. They need to be gotten rid of.
And you know what? It's easy perhaps for the few of us, knock on wood, you know, we still have our jobs after making through all of this. I think if I was retrenched sitting at home because my business has gone under, because my bosses couldn't manage to keep me around, I would feel like it's a slap in the face to hear that the SABC is still being kept running or SAA is having millions or billions pumped into them for the upteen
like
time.
Why did they get treated differently to me? How come they're more special? Well, listen to this quickly. There are a few messages that have come through. Chow says, it sounds like this woman is experiencing the first retrenchment of her life. The company I worked in went through 4 retrenchments in the last 4 years.
Shucks.
Yeah. So no, there's no sympathy coming from people who've already felt retrenchment. Those passionate speeches where people repeat the same line, the last line twice, is so damn cringe. That's what Mornay says. I couldn't agree more. And also when they repeat like a line from George Floyd, I mean, that's got nothing to do with this. Nothing.
That made me uncomfortable.
It's terrible. So George Floyd, the guy is killed by a policeman kneeling on his neck. SABC, you can't breathe because what? They're going to fire you because they can't run the business anymore? They're not the same thing.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
I liken Cressilda's grandstanding as the band playing while the Titanic sinks, says Kevin. Also, it's weird how journalists who work in a newsroom didn't see this coming. That's unkind, but probably true. Tracy says the SABC is like a child throwing a tantrum. Stomping their little feet will achieve absolutely nothing. And chanting, "We can't breathe." Seriously, bunch of children. A primary school newspaper has more credibility. Just because you've been in the business of news for decades doesn't mean that you're actually any good at it. Well, as I said, there are people who are good. I just want to make that clear from my point of view, you know.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see where this thing will go. And I think the journalists themselves were very strategic in how they played it all out. So one of the heads at SABC was actually meant to have a live interview on ENCA yesterday afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, no, you aren't going there. No, we have some things to say. So they almost, like, in my mind, kept him hostage to deal with all of this. And so the SABC had to call ENCA and say, actually, sorry, no, we can't do this interview right now because so-and-so is not available. And that's how we now know about this. And that's how it's now a bigger story than it is.
Well,
I wonder where this is going to go.
I don't know, but this is not new because the SABC's been in shit for, 6-7 years now under Hladi Motsoeneng's control. And even before that, frankly. I mean, I never knew who was in charge. I remember I met the CEO once at the J&B Met in Cape Town, and I had no idea who she was. And she was really pissed off with me that I didn't know who she was. But she had never, ever introduced herself to any of us. And she was in for like 3 months. And, they kept changing the CEO and the board, frankly. So she bumped into me there, and she's like, "Hi, Gareth." So I said to her, hi, what's your name? She was furious. She's like, "I can't believe you don't know who I am. I'm the CEO of the SABC." I'm meant to be genuflecting, you know. I'm meant to be on my knees thanking her very much for a job she didn't give me.
Ooh, that's a word of the day.
Yeah.
That's the problem with this world. Everyone thinks like they're bigger than they are. When at the end of the day, we're just these little micro particles, and we're just numbers at the end of the day. And if you want to do something, you need to join hands with others and do things. Do great things. Elon Musk did.
It's me. It's totally what is my position in this? How do I feel about this? If you just take yourself out of the equation once every three times, you'll have a better life. You'll have more fun. You won't be so angry.
Yeah, people need to wake up and just realize the world doesn't owe them anything. And whatever you want to achieve in life, you have to go out and do it yourself. You have to go out and get it for yourself. You want to become CEO, start a company, and then you're CEO. But make sure it's a damn good company. So someone says, "He's the CEO of X, Y, and Z." And don't be afraid to start out and be like a tiny little company that will grow over years. No one starts out like a massive company. For instance, relating back to Nasty C when we had him on the show, I just recently started following someone on Instagram. This girl has 1,500 followers. And when I see celebrities, I'm not fazed at all. I mean, I met Harvey Specter once and he said no to a photo. I took one anyway. I'm not fazed by that. I saw this person at gym yesterday and I was starstruck.
Who?
She has 1,500 followers on Instagram, but I think she's the next big thing.
Let me guess, she's pretty.
No. I mean, she's pretty, but she's got talent. Okay, mix the wittiness of Anne Hirsch. She's a comedian. So, wittiness of Anne Hirsch.
Well, who is she? Tell us so we can all follow her.
Let me pull up her Instagram.
You didn't go and harass her at gym, did you?
No. I was shy. I was a bit starstruck.
You're never like that.
Yeah, she's literally as relatable as Barry Hilton, has the energy of Coconut Kells mixed with the wittiness of Anne Hirsch. And she's got 1,500 followers, and
name?
I believe she'll blow up.
Tell me, we want to look her up.
So it's Jenna Babes, JennaBabez_. She's literally continuously uploading funny little comments and stuff.
All right.
You should do a challenge, Gareth. How many, she's got two comments on her last post. How many comments to have on your show? 2020 is all about challenges.
Nah, dude, I don't make people do that.
Oh, that's Jenna Babes.
She looks fun. She looks kind of crazy.
She's absolutely hilarious. And
right.
I was sitting at a table and someone was like, "Have you seen what Jenna Babes posted?" I was like, "Who?" And then they showed me like three clips. I was like, okay, this is relatable. This, like, everyone can understand. Everyone's going through these things. Loved it.
I just like in her bio, she says 2020 was meant to be my gap year. So that I like. All right.
So she pivoted.
All right. So here's Trevor. Trevor says, I walked into the kitchen this morning and Helen is listening to your show as usual. I said, isn't it cool that Gareth always remembers your name because you introduced Wu Zetian to him? Now one of the top 10 in history. That's for the Blind History podcast. Helen's like, Cliff already forgot my name because when he introduced Blind History, he said, Robin. It was Robin. I'm sorry, it wasn't Helen. It was Robin who introduced us to that that person from history, and we did the show because of her. So I screwed it up. Aww. It's my fault. Sorry, Helen. Shivesh says, Tani. What the hell's that? Drake just called to let me know that his famous song was based on Michael Flax's rise at Cliff Central. That's very good. All right. Very nice. Okay. I love this. Just one quick thing before we get to Brett Cohen. This is a story about a Zambian dude who divorced his wife because she refused him sex. She says she's pregnant by the Holy Spirit. And somehow he's going to get the divorce. Somehow that actually figures. I need to understand this.
Wait. She said she's pregnant by the Holy Spirit and doesn't want to have sex with Michael. Him, so he wants a divorce.
Mm. Michael, don't come in between what the Holy Spirit has ordained in her life. Okay?
I have a feeling like he's the only one speaking sense here because he wants the divorce. In this case, you should be getting the divorce.
Dude, if she's pregnant and he's not having sex with her, then he should be getting the divorce anyway for obvious reasons. Okay. But if he's getting the divorce because he actually believes her that the Holy Spirit has impregnated her, then I think he needs to probably get away from her and they need to get away from each other and we should all avoid them.
But is it cheating really if the Holy Spirit puts, a child inside of you? Yeah. But anyway,
how often does that happen, Sia, that the Holy Spirit goes into mortal form and impregnates random women in Zambia? How often does that happen?
My knowledge, the last time it happened was when Mary was impregnated by the Holy Spirit.
Should we all just get ready for more of these kinds of things to happen?
It could be the end of days. So yes, yeah, maybe okay. This is happening. Yeah. Right. So this man, he's fed up in Zambia. He claims that his wife refused to have sex with him since July because a prophet she has been consulting with since 2018 told her not to have any sex at all because she's pregnant by the Holy Spirit. This man alleges that the wife, the 38-year-old wife, listened to the prophet more than him and consulted the prophet every time her husband asked for sex.
I think we all know what's going on. The prophet is stupping her. That's what's happening. There's a whole lot of prophet stupping going on.
They've been married since 1990 and they have two children together. Imagine this is how your marriage ends. Just nonsense.
I would not tolerate that excuse, eh?
Such bullshit. Well, I mean, Woody points out quite rightly from Greek mythology, and I can't tell you enough how many times I wished that everybody would listen to the audiobook version of Stephen Fry's Mythos. Please do it. It just gives you a rounding in classical education that would make every day more interesting. You know, the ancient Greeks, they wrote these amazing myths about their gods and their heroes, and those stories are still good. And Stephen Fry is the most magnificent storyteller. Please, if you listen to an audiobook in December, let it be Mythos, Mythos. Do it. Get that audiobook today. So good. Fuck, it's good. And Woody says Zeus, the king of the gods, used to do that a lot where he took mortal form. He had loads of bastards running around. That's why Hera, his wife, was always pissed off at him. Yeah, that's exactly right, Woody. That's what made me think of Mythos. Yes.
2 seconds, like a minute ago, I was telling you a story about Jenna Babes and how she's only got like 1,500 followers.
Mm.
She just hit 1,600 now in like 2 minutes.
We have very cool listeners.
The clout is ridiculous.
Dude, we have the best listeners in the world. Why do you think we're doing this thing? You think after 7 years I would have carried on doing this if we had a shitty audience?
But, like, I'm watching this live and it's, like, mind-blowing how much, like, impact words can carry. It's ridiculous.
This is what we do.
Now, Flex, so, I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying now you have an in with her.
Yeah, you can explain. No. Send her a message.
I'm starstruck.
No, but send her a DM on Instagram. I know you're not into her romantically, but send her a DM on Instagram and say to her, listen, hope you don't mind, but I mentioned you on Gareth's show this morning, and that's why you've suddenly got all these new followers. Because she's going to be confused.
I think I'm just going to go up to her in German and tell her I'm a big fan, and because I am.
You're more than a fan now. You've done more for her. Flex, you can impregnate her with the Holy Spirit. I'm joking.
I am.
Oh, quickly, before we get to Brett, because Brett's going to come on and talk to us about how we could have handled and thought of a better way to do the whole coronavirus thing properly. But before we get to that, Flex, we always need an update on how everybody in the family is. How's your mom?
Ooh, how's she doing? The family's well.
Yeah.
My parents have, like, started living their best life, where they've reached the point where it's like they phone me less during the day, and they now focusing on their life. Like, my mom's building her, like, dream house now, which is, like, over the top. Literally, I went in there the other day. She has this thing next to the toilet, which it's not even a boudoir or
bidet.
It's a hose pipe. It's literally, I don't know how you use it. I don't know where you stick it. But every toilet has a hose pipe next to it.
You know what, Flex? They use those especially in Muslim countries, actually. So you wash out your asshole after you've taken a dump.
Like, I always said in life, when I have a bidet next to my
Sia's
toilet,
face.
I've made it. But
look,
this is like an easier way than installing one.
Wow. So she's really getting everything she wants at this stage in her life. And she deserves it. Your mother's worked damn hard, man.
Heated towel racks.
Yes.
She got an egg toilet. Have you ever heard of an egg toilet?
Tell me about that.
What is that?
It's a toilet in the shape of an egg.
Mm.
Just for stylish reason.
Mm.
But now they installed the toilet too high. And when you sit on it, your feet don't touch the ground.
Actually, screw it. Good for her.
I love that. That's great. Sia, you will want all this stuff one day. I know you.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Oh, over the top.
Let her be with an egg toilet.
An egg toilet.
Do you know, like, you'll walk into a bathroom and you'll switch on the lights?
Yeah.
Not my mom's bathroom. My mom's bathroom, you touch the mirror and the mirror lights up. Too hectic.
That's awesome. All right, Flexi, we'll check in with you again soon. Have an awesome December if we don't speak to you before then, huh?
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cool,
keep well,
dude.
Keep all right. safe.
Good to see you. There's Michael Flex. Fantastic. All right. Hey, Brett Cohen, how are you, dude?
I'm well, and you, Gareth? How's it going?
Nice to see you. You know, in that chair with those headphones on, you look like you are ready to game. That's what you look like. You look like you're ready to play games with us.
Yeah, look, the distinction between life and games is getting thinner and thinner all the time. So this is actually my normal look.
I know, but this is also how you run your business from that same chair.
Pretty much. which, in the case of the SABC, is kind of like running a game.
Yes, how's that place? But before we start, before we start with what we want to talk about today, I just want to let Caleb in quickly. Hey, Caleb, what's happening, man?
I'm good. I just want to touch base with what Flex was talking about. And you mentioned about the Muslim bathrooms. Yes. Weird story. So yes. I moved here last year in the Middle East. I've told you that already.
You're in what? You're in Kazakhstan in Kurdistan.
Kurdistan.
Yeah.
Yes, the flag that you have close to you. Yes.
That's right.
So what happened was when I moved in, they don't have big drainage pipes for their bathrooms because they don't use toilet paper.
Mm.
So comes this boy, originally from Zimbabwe, lived in Namibia. Mm-hmm. So braais are my thing, right? Steak on a Saturday afternoon is what I do. So you can imagine what happened. Every 2 weeks, I had to get the caretaker tell me that your bathroom is blocked and everything is outside because the pipes are not meant for toilet paper. Until such a time, he said, if this happens again, you're going to have to go.
Sorry, we lost you there. You're going to have to go where? Caleb.
I think it's a good thing we lost him.
Well, I think we just—he's just gone.
Oh, thank goodness! Thank you. Jesus.
So he was taking extremely big dumps in a toilet system that couldn't handle them. Jesus, that's
Saturday brunch, mate.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So Brett, let me just let people know what we're doing here, because it's only week two. We've obviously been forced to reconfigure our whole lives because of lockdown. And the question that we're asking this morning is, couldn't we have thought of a better way to handle the coronavirus? Now, you've got some pretty weird ideas, always come from left field. And it's one of the reasons that I want to have you on the show and that we're talking to you every week. But obviously, we know about the mental health, the economic destitution, the fact that families have been damaged by this, community, society as a whole. And the worst of it is the idea that when lockdown ends, the virus resumes and you're back where you started. So there's no exit strategy being planned. Politicians are the most useless people to manage this thing, because politicians are only actually interested in themselves. So they're just going to try and do whatever it is that'll get them the least amount of blame and that will keep them in their jobs, because they need to win popularity contests to stay in their jobs. So we're going to discuss that, an alternative to lockdown, and how we might have been able to do this better. So Brett Cohen, for those of you who don't know, he's from the gas company. He's back for a new feature called The Alternative, which we started last week. And we'll take an alternative look at things once a week. And this means viewpoints, alternative solutions to problems that we've got, just like the gas company is into alternative energy. You know, you don't need to rely on Eskom. God knows we can't, because if you do, your fridge is not going to work, your stove's not going to work, you're going to be screwed. You can't even make your cup of tea like I'm having here this morning, because if I had a gas stove, though, I would never have to worry about this stuff. All we have to do, Brett, is figure out a way to do like gas internet.
Well, it can be done. You know, you can use gas to generate electricity. In fact, we do in times of crisis in South Africa. They use gas, natural gas, diesel. They've got all sorts of generators generating electricity when the coal power plants aren't manufacturing enough. So it can be done. That's not a big problem. Look, the bottom line is, you know, not just energy. You don't want to rely on the state for anything.
No, absolutely.
I think we make a mistake. I think part of the reason why politicians get away with what they get away with globally is because everybody in their own little small community seems to think that this is a localized problem. The mess in government is a global problem. It's the same everywhere in the world.
Absolutely.
But nobody seems to be pushing up against it. Everybody seems to be going, well, this is just our government that's screwed. I don't know. The Norwegians have got it right.
You know, so what you're saying is so true. I mean, we spoke to Tim Cully on Monday morning. He's from England, and his parents are going through the worst at the moment because they're in their very hard lockdown, and they might be that way until Christmas. You've got people like the governor of California and the governor of New York saying to Americans, you can't spend Thanksgiving and Christmas with your families. I mean, can you imagine that? If you are told by government that you can't go and be with the people you love at that time of year, that is where you've got to, someone's got to wake up and go, actually, I'm not going to let politicians tell me what I can and can't do. And I'm not afraid enough of this virus for it to put me in a position where I can't even be with my family. Are you kidding?
Bullshit. Yeah, it's insane. But it's even worse than that. I don't know if you've noticed, like there's this catchphrase that everybody seems to have nowadays. As soon as we see something that we don't like, remember we spoke about the woke mob last week and righteousness. As soon as we see something that we feel doesn't have the moral high ground, we're behaving in a way that's inappropriate, then the government needs to step in and correct it. That's become our belief structure. Yeah. That's kind of what we want. And that's the most insane way of thinking about the world.
Well, before we talk about the alternative ways we could have handled the lockdown, I just want to hear your thoughts on something that was a big story yesterday. And we've talked about it a little bit this morning. But these social media platforms, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey had to appear in front of the Senate yesterday. And I'm really torn, because I don't want government interfering in private businesses, and I don't want government regulating private business. As far as possible, they should stay the hell out of it. You know, again, you're giving power to politicians, and when you do that, you very seldom get it back. But at the same time, you've got people like Jack Dorsey, who's frankly running a platform that's doing more damage than good, if you ask me. And Twitter is having a negative influence on many people, mental health-wise, from a point of view of nastiness, let alone hate speech and influencing elections. So how do you feel that should go down? Because you don't want the government to regulate them, but at the same time, they can't be allowed to just do whatever the money directs them to do, because they have huge influence on the population.
It's a complicated problem. I think to start off with, if you're banning something or if you're trying to ban something, you're probably doing it wrong right off the bat. It's kind of like the same argument as if you rear end a car, it's your fault. It's kind of the same thing. There's very, very, very rare cases where banning is the right approach.
Right.
To the thing.
Okay.
The second big problem over there is that you don't, now you've got this sort of mix. Is it government regulating it or is it regulating itself? Is this a private company or is it a government regulated company that's kind of a private company? So now you've got a world where the government's telling them what to do. They're being directed by ad and ad revenue. It's going to be really messy trying to understand how this thing's going to fit together. Number two. Number three, free speech is primary. It should never, ever be banned, whether it's hate speech or not hate speech. I think that I'm going to say something very controversial now, and a lot of people will be very angered with me, but you have the right to be an asshole. You, in fact, have the right to hate. You have the right to not like other people. You have the right to judge other people.
Right.
What you don't have the right to do is influence the outcome of that person's life. So your rights are not allowed to impose on another person's rights.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that the moment we're saying you're not allowed to think something or you're not allowed to say something, you're effectively saying you're not allowed to think something. And so we're going into a very, very Orwellian world relatively quickly. Yes, Twitter is a frightening engine, but the government controlling Twitter is a much more frightening outcome.
Absolutely, because they can back that up, you know, with state force. It's the same way they get you to pay your taxes. They're the only ones with a gun.
100%. And, you know, there's a conspiracy theorist in me that says the government would love to have control over the social media platforms control over the normal media platforms for many years.
Yeah.
So there's a bigger game at play over here. Jack Dorsey's mad, but I actually think in some ways Twitter is the nicest of the platforms because it's unpolished, because it's so rude and crass. But I can see the concerns around it. I can see the issues around that. I think the people need to work out how to regulate that.
All right. So if you were in government, because this is something I've thought about a lot, but I honestly don't have answers. I know you've spent a lot of time thinking about this. You read an enormous amount about this, and you've obviously having run your business through lockdown, you must have learned some interesting lessons too. So tell me about the alternative ways we could have handled the lockdown.
So I think the lockdown, if we ever look at... The lockdown shouldn't happen at all. I don't think we should be locking anything down. Again, you're back to banning. You're effectively saying, right, everybody's equal. Everybody has an equal chance of dying of this virus. We're all sort of equally susceptible. What about grandma? Nobody's allowed to leave the house.
Right.
It's an insane. It's you're clubbing it with a brick instead of trying to find the nuance in it and trying to solve the problem more sensibly.
Yeah.
I think probably a much, much cleverer approach. I mean, if we just talk about the finance first to set this thing up so that I can show you where we're going. If we talk about the money that was collected, if we have a look at what happened in May or March, whenever the thing kicked in South Africa and we started talking about lockdown and we started having, I think it was April, started having a look at what needs to happen. Patrice put some money up. The De Beers put some money up. The Anglo-Americans put some money up. A whole lot of money came into a fund. I think they had 3 billion rand at one stage in the
that's
fund.
Right.
The 3 billion rand was out in a month. It was gone. It was dedicated to businesses that were in trouble. It was dedicated to, I don't know, some of it was stolen, I suppose. I don't know where all the money went. But that's a lot of money. It's a reasonable amount of money. That's over and above what the government set aside to do it with and what other provisions have been put in place, money being borrowed, money's being printed out of thin air. Money's sort of all over the show in terms of that. And yet all the economies globally are in real trouble. And I think we must again talk about this isn't a South African problem. This is a global problem. South Africa really is following what the rest of the world is doing to a large extent.
Correct.
Everybody except Sweden, it would appear. So if you'd taken all that money and you'd said, right, who is highly susceptible? Who is comorbid? Who stands a chance of losing their life? Or who is at real risk of death?
Mm-hmm.
In this scenario, we know the numbers. We knew the numbers in April already. The Chinese told us the numbers. They told us that children are fine to a very large extent. The morbidity rate in children is less than 0.1%.
Right.
And as you go older and older and older, like all diseases, it ratchets up. But in the case of COVID, what seemed to happen is as we get to 60, 70, 80, it really ratchets up. That's why you see a place like Italy was decimated because they have a relatively old population. They're decimated again. It's going to happen again. The UK, I guess, maybe also has a relatively old population. I don't know why their numbers are quite as ugly as they are. Yeah, those sort of problems. So a cleverer approach might be to say, right, these are the things that make you susceptible. publish it, make it known, use the Gareth Cliff Show, use the SABC if you absolutely have to. Let the people know that these are the things that we think put you at risk. If you can identify as somebody who's at risk in this thing, then it's on you to do what you need to do. What we will do is we will make funds available, that $3 billion plus, 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 and we will pump it into the health sector.
Yes.
Because that's where the money is going to be needed. And you will be able to apply. So if you are comorbid and you have a high risk of dying or of really being severely impacted by this thing, we will make a fund available to you. You can apply. We will make sure that your employer cannot fire you. You are protected for the duration of your illness or the time that you need to be defended in this illness. And we will look after those numbers. And everybody else, those who are comorbid and are prepared to take the risk, and everybody who feels like I'm relatively safe, this thing's not actually affecting me, can carry on with their normal lives. So we're still generating money. We still have an economy. We're still building up funds that we can pump into the same COVID fund next year and keep the world going. That, to me, would have been a much more sensible approach than this mindless.
Here's the worry I have, and it was brought up by a friend of mine last night. He said, the problem is now that government have figured out that they can do something like a lockdown, they're going to use this as an excuse to do all kinds of other stupid shit in the future.
They have already. That's part of the reason why they've gone with a lockdown. That's why it's been popular, especially in the UK and the US, because they so strongly influence us. It's actually staggering and a little bit sickening. But be that as it may, that's a different conversation. The US governmental system, their whole sort of political system is opportunistic and on the front foot. Make no mistake, they're aggressive and they're reasonably corrupt. And when they saw that there was an opportunity to pass martial law over here and to have an environment where the laws that get passed don't have to go through the usual process to be vetted, they jumped on it. And so did ours, and so did every other government in the world. Who wouldn't? If I was in government, I'd probably do it myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way for them to aggregate power. And who doesn't want to 100%. Get more power to themselves, you know? So I totally agree with your measure. I mean, there's actually a name for it. I think it's called focused group isolation or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the term is for it. But this is precisely, obviously, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you know, everybody has 20/20 vision. But this is the way, if we're ever stuck with any of this stuff going forward, if let's say there's a new virus that comes out or there's some other, we should really approach it having learned something. Because if we do exactly the same stupid things that we did this year, then we have no one to blame but ourselves.
Look, I don't see that happening in the short term. I think in the longer term, perhaps, I think some political restructuring needs to happen globally. And I think it's coming. I do feel like there's a lot of resentment towards how the system is put together at the moment. Yeah. There's a lot of talk also, you know, on the fringes of how it will change in the future and what needs to happen. But I think until that political change happens, it's status quo. I mean, the World Health Organization, bless them for what they're worth, originally said lockdown is the way you have to do this. Do it immediately. Sort yourself out. It's what China did. They sorted their problems out, which we should get back to because it's quite an interesting scenario around China. They've changed their mind 180 degrees now, and they're saying lockdown is the worst thing you can do. Please try avoid lockdown and find another way to solve this problem. So the organizations that we put in place after the Second World War, when we went through all of that pain and we started putting these things, that NATO and the UN, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, all these other bits and pieces that we put together under the auspices of sort of having central bodies that were neutral, that could control these things, have had to do nothing for 70 or 100 years. And so they've gotten fat and useless and really aren't providing the guidance that we need. We're in a leadership void. The governments around the world have no leadership in them. Spot or very on. Rarely do.
Absolutely.
Perhaps we can name 3 or 4 in the world that really you can say are outstanding, if that many. And then the organizations that are neutral that are supposed to be backing them up are either corrupt or just...
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a spot on summary of the problem from a global point of view. So listen, it's always good to get your point of view on this, because I do think that it's unique. And you know, the problem is that like lots of people have good ideas, but very few people actually are brave enough to say them. So it's good to hear yours. And just so that we know, because I've been to your place here in Centurion, it's just up the road, and you've got everything. What kinds of appliances are you guys bringing in now? Because I know that there are lots of people who are thinking about going for gas, and it's not just the things that we would expect, like a gas stove or a gas fridge, for example. There are other things too. I mean, like, what are the more interesting ones that you've got coming in at the moment?
So in terms of energy supply, you want a hybrid supply. I think it's a little immature. A lot of people come in and say, we want to get off the grid. We want to look at an alternative.
Sure.
You know, sure, I can see the justification for it. It's still very expensive to get off the grid.
That is.
Completely. And it requires a change of lifestyle. And that's the thing to realize. If you're prepared to change your lifestyle, if you're a bit of a hippie and you can live with some of the changes that need to happen, then it makes sense. But to try to get off the grid completely and not have grid backup at all in the current world where we are now, probably isn't the right approach. You probably want a hybrid approach of some sort. So we need to put that in there first. In terms of the alternatives, you've got electricity, you've got gas, and a whole lot of other hydrocarbons that you could burn. And then you've got the renewables, which all effectively generate electricity in some
form or
another. But generally don't generate enough electricity for things that really need power, which are motors, which are quite a difficult problem to solve. Heating, cooling, and cooking and water heating are the areas where electricity doesn't really shine. It's pretty good at running the internet, like you've alluded to already. although if you saw the size of some of the machinery that Microsoft and Google put together, they actually sink them under the ocean to keep them cool. So there's quite a lot of power that goes into those things also. They certainly not run off solar power, although they're converting too. In terms of gas, where it really shines, water heating, space heating.
Well, listen, you say water heating. I mean, I only realized, like, the thing that probably pushes up my electricity bill more than anything else is my kettle.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, geysers and kettle. Those are the things that are sucking up most of the energy.
Yeah, 100%. And oven, if you bake in the oven a lot, I don't know, different people cook differently, but the oven also chews up quite a lot of power. Yeah,
luckily, that's not an issue in my house. I don't even know where to switch my oven on.
You stop off at a certain white meat chicken place on the way home.
I don't think I could bake bread, even if I had a master chef showing me how. I'd probably screw it up. All right, listen, this is all very, very helpful. We will chat to you again in a few days' time. Thank you so much, Brett. Always good to get your point of view. And you can find out more about the gas company. They're online as well. But I would advise you go and actually check the place out. It's pretty damn impressive. And they have awesome staff, and they've got a whole – they can come in and set you up. I mean, they can help you install. There are different ways to do it, different ways to pay for it. It's really, really cool. Go and take a look at them. All right, thanks, Brett.
Wow, what a punch. I should have had you as a wingman in my youth, mate.
Dude, we only bring clients onto Cliff Central if we know that their products are things that one or two of us use. And I mean, I've been there. I was a client of yours before you were a client of mine. So
that's true.
And then, Brett, I'm also here and very willing to write a theme song for you guys.
Stop.
I want to set you up.
No, please, for God's sake. All right.
Oh, come on, you've got to let it run, Gareth. There's something, this is magic.
There's something I can do. I want to set you up.
Yeah, on second thought, maybe Gareth's got a point here.
Let me save you from embarrassment. All right, Brett. Thanks, man.
Cheers, gents. I appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
Cheers, dude. Bye-bye.
Catch you later.
You know when you meet somebody, first time I met him, I was like, this is my kind of guy. And I knew he would be the kind of dude who, the audience that we've got would like to hear from, because he's just no bullshit. Yeah. Just no bullshit whatsoever. I love it.
Calls it like it is.
Damn right. Sure. Okay, so Wednesday is here. I've got things to do, people to see, places to go. Looks like it's going to be a busy day for everybody, and I hope it is. We were looking at December yesterday in our meeting. We're probably going to be doing the show right up to Christmas, so all the way up to the 24th. And we'll probably only be off for about a week because, I mean, none of us are going away, and the show we can do from wherever now. So it just shows you we're actually going to be working harder this December than we've worked any other December. And
it's a new experience this time around, because, well, where are people going? And in any case, we're doing the show from home. So,
well,
it's not.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going away. And if you can get away, that's great. A lot of people can't afford to go away. So I'm well aware of that. And frankly, I'm not looking at spending money. I know that sounds schnorrer, but I had such a great year of travel last year. I'm not feeling like I'm missing anything. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go and be in, I mean, the last place I want to be, frankly, and no disrespect meant to you, Cape Town, but the last place I want to be is Cape Town with, you know, just millions of people and, you know, you can't go anywhere because it's too crowded. And I'm telling you, with these COVID rules, they're going to be making people's lives a mess. I want to bring up something else. I know a couple who've been trying to buy a house and the bank just will not give them a home loan. Now, they're both professionals. They have good jobs. And it boggles my mind that in a country where we're trying to get more people to own homes and we're trying to get more people to be financially independent, a lot of people need the bank to help them buy that first house, right? Mm-hmm. You would think. Well, for the second time, they've been declined a bond by their bank. Now, I'm wondering if they should maybe go to another bank or if there are other businesses that they should talk to, because this is something that bothers me. I mean, how can young people ever be expected to participate meaningfully in the economy if they don't own a property? And we're talking, these are not people in their 20s anymore. These are people in their 30s, you know? So at that stage of your life, you kind of need to hop on the property ladder somewhere. And they both have income. They aren't married, but they both have pretty good income. They've both got professional qualifications. They do responsible jobs. There is no reason why they should have been declined by their bank. And it's been on my mind for the last couple of days because I'm frustrated for them. So I don't know what that means, but it's really, really stupid in my opinion. And I think the banks need to pull their fucking socks up. I South African banks have got a lot to prove. They've got a lot to show us in terms of their goodwill, because that has not been evident. In fact, the banks have been playing against the South African public in many ways, and for, you know, currency trading and kind of against our own economy in some ways. And I feel that that's a big gap that needs to be filled. And someone needs to hold, just like we're talking about Zuckerberg and Dorsey being held accountable for their platforms. I think that the banks in this country, they need to explain some stuff to the people of South Africa, because they're in cahoots with the government, without a doubt. They think they can tell the government what to do because of what happened with Nene. And I don't think that the banks are always your friend. They've got a lot to say, and most of it is not in defense of the people of South Africa. So I do think that there's...
And they have a business to run.
They have businesses to run. I get that. I totally understand that. You need to just, you know, be a little more thoughtful about the people themselves, because ordinary people can't afford to buy houses without bank loans and that kind of thing. And it would do all the banks a tremendous amount of PR good if they were just a little more considerate some of the time. And I get that they've got really big considerations and some people don't pay their loans back and there are delinquents out there. I get that. But it's something worth considering. So I just thought I'd throw that in there. Ruth says, my son's school is closed due to a fellow classmate being asymptomatic. It's so stupid. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Serena says, I freelance as a yacht stewardess, and some guests go number two and vomit in the B-days. Ugh. That is revolting. Carl says, it's about time that you and Sia worked hard. You are lazy bastards. All right. We'll take it.
Oh, please, Carl.
We'll take it. Oh, Mythos by Stephen Fry is a great book, says Danny. So Danny agrees with me. And I was declined forever. Eventually, my builder did it on his overdraft. Only then could I afford it. Wow. That's incredible. That's a hell of a thing, hey?
And sure. What a process.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Gareth, it is not the ANC government, it is the Banche government, Banchee. I don't know what that means, but okay. Thank you, Daryl.
I'm confused.
I'm just as confused. All right, everybody, that's all we got time for this morning. Have a happy day, and we will see you tomorrow bright and early at 6 o'clock.
CliffCentral.com